Hello and welcome to the Aldie News Round with Giles and Mary. Giles Wood, the distinguished painter and columnist for the Aldie, and Mary Killen, a distinguished contributor to the Aldie and the agony aunt of the Spectator under the name Dear Mary. Now, I'm so sorry to lower the tone, but I was going to begin with some gossip, which is the actor Ian Griffith has split up from his wife, Alice F. Evans, and has a new girlfriend, Bianca Wallace. And the poor deserted wife, Alice Evans, has said how terribly he's behaved to the Daily Mail. Now, we're not here to invade their personal space, but just to discuss generally about what happens when a husband or anyone else, a wife indeed, lets you down. Do you respond like the poor deserted Alice Evans has done, or do you rise above it? So, Mary, obviously there's no suggestion at all of anything like this going on in your marriage, but when Giles behaves badly, do you rise above it or respond?
Well, he doesn't do seriously bad things. He just does low-grade microaggressions. So there's been no need for me to go to the press about disloyalty or anything like that. But I, when it's a big problem, like, I can't pronounce his name. What is it? Ion?
Well, I think you say Yayan, but I'm not quite sure. But yeah, but famous as the hornblower actor, you'd all recognise him, yeah.
Yes, I know, he's very handsome. Yeah. But when it's a problem like that, I don't think the wife should go to the press, because look what happened when Princess Di went to the press. It's not a good, that she should have learnt her lesson. There's nothing to be gained from it. It just leaves a toxic legacy, and then the children grow up and read it and are upset by it. Much better to rise above it.
And Giles, what do you think? You're always cast as the demon in your marriage, not least in your own columns in the Aldie. But does Mary ever annoy you?
I think the generation, the people that were sent away to public school and prep schools, that was the golden age for divorce. Our parents had a whale of a time in the 60s, the 70s, and to a certain extent in the 80s. That was the golden age of infidelity, when your children were at private school and you could carry on being unfaithful.
Speak for your own parents. Mine didn't.
I haven't quite got the measure of this problem, Mary, because I'm not unfaithful myself.
I'm not talking about infidelities. I'm talking more about when one's spouse is irritating, generally, even on minor issues. Do you rise to it or rise above it?
I think you've got to look in the long haul. That's like a long haul flight. You've just got to get through it. And then, when I was in service as a gardener to Ludovic Kennedy, Nutty,
yeah,
he once said to me, "It's worth persevering with a marriage." He was married, if you remember, to Moira Shearer, Red Shoes ballerina. He said, "Then you get to the sunny uplands of marriage." And it's worth going through a bit of plaster has to come off the ceiling, as Boris might say, and it's worth persevering. We haven't actually reached that stage yet, have we, Mary?
No.
Where it's worth persevering.
But in terms of going to the press to demonise your partner, I think that women are in a very difficult position because their so-called best friends, female best friends, often egg them on to do these destructive things. And the best friends have a hidden agenda, I'm afraid, which is they were jealous of this beautiful couple. And now they try to sort of make things bad, you know, by getting her to demonize him in the press.
I think the Tories ought to do a lot more to support the family through taxation.
Yes.
They've never given any support to the family at all, really.
No, there's
no preferential treatment that married people get, I don't think.
There has, in fact, been, sadly, an uptick in divorce during lockdown. That was in the papers this week. During lockdown, did you get closer or grow far away, if that's
not unusual, because Mary's had a man about the house for 30 years, so that wasn't going to be a problem with us. But I think for a lot of lockdown couples, the unwanted closeness, proximity to their partner, that now that he wasn't going to the office,
yes,
or flying out to Geneva for business conferences, that was a huge problem, to have the physical presence of the partner and And that did cause a lot of splitting, didn't it, Mary?
It did. But I think that when you've got actors, they're only human. And if they're going to spend more time with somebody very attractive and compatible in the workplace, they're going to sort of start getting closer to that person than they are to their actual wife. It's a well-known side effect of working in film or stage, is that you start bonding with women or men in the cast.
And that's exactly what happened on this occasion, that he's ended up with inevitably the much younger model.
All company directors, Mary, had affairs with their secretaries.
In the past.
But you say, because I've never worked in an office, I don't have any experience of office life, but you say you're not allowed to have office Romeos.
Anymore.
There's no such thing as an office Romeo.
I'm sure it goes on, but probably it has to be much, much more quiet, doesn't it? Because then you get all sorts of problems with, in fact, it's happened with the German editor of Bild, the German equivalent of The Sun, that it's revealed that he had lots of affairs with young women in his office. Went out with them, promoted them, then dumped them and sacked them, which isn't ideal behaviour, is it?
I think there's a bit of doggerel that's coming into my mind, Mary, which I always misquote because I haven't seen it in print for so long. Igamous, hogamous, men
are polygamous.
Hogamous, higamous, women are monogamous. That's and it's something like that.
That sounds entirely true. Now, moving on to the next topic. Chris Packham, famous TV wildlife expert, wants shooting banned, and Jeremy Clarkson has been defending the practice. I'm not asking you to come down on either side of this issue. I know it's a tricky one, but it's a good springboard for talking about what you do in the country all day to keep yourself amused. That it strikes me a lot of those country sports, they're great, but they take up an awful lot of time, and that's partly the point of them. When you both aren't working, how do you use up your time in the country? Mary first.
I don't have any time to use up because I'm doing skivvying away day and night with heaps of laundry and that kind of thing. But I like going on walks with my friends and chatting. And sometimes I go and attend cricket matches and stuff like that, just for the sake of socialising. There's masses to do in the country these days. It's not, well, of course, it's a bit grimmer in winter when it's dark at 4 o'clock, but there's plenty to do and there are plenty of people around. It used to be that you were stuck in the country with no like-minded friends, and now, you know, lots of people have moved into the country from London.
And in fact, you've written, Mary, in the Oldie about the decline of commuting, that people who used to get the 6:37 from Pusey to London are now working, they're staying in Pusey, is that right?
Yes.
Then you get the accused of the gentrification of the countryside. But this business about Packham and shooting, I think he ought to look into the psychology and the history of it a bit more. I've got Richard Ingram's anthology here, England. And there's so much about country sports. Here's Francis Kilvert. What a fine day it is. Let us go out and kill something. The old reproach against the English. And that is the thing that we have traditionally been beastly and gone out and killed things for sport or for meat for generations. And it's a very difficult thing to sort of get out of the system. I think a lot of men do pheasant shooting in order to release excess frustration and aggression, which might otherwise be turned against their wives or children. So it's an outlet for the essential beastliness of mankind. And I think there's a very strong conservation reason to do it, because all the features of the countryside, the woodlands and the coverts and things might all disappear if it wasn't for...
That's what Clarkson said. And, Charles, you're a very keen gardener. Mary sometimes accuses you of not doing very much in the garden. And I believe your response is you're creating a habitat for overwintering invertebrates. Is that correct?
Most of the stuff I do in the garden, she doesn't understand. So she says at the beginning of the day, are you going to spend the day making more messes in the garden? At the moment, I'm making a mess. I'm cutting down an old rose next to the pond. Things get overgrown. I've only just learnt about this concept of things being overgrown recently. And now I'm cutting everything back. So there's my woodland is a constant succession of dynamic interplay between destruction, reconstruction, ecological restoration. And I'm probably one of the few people in woodland managers to understand the importance of dead wood. In fact, I think my autobiography will be called Dead Wood. instead of burning a lot of the brash and the brushwood that I generate, I put them into what is fashionably called slow heaps, which either rots down and creates a habitat for invertebrates, or 2 years later, I come and trample it, which is the, imitating the action of giant herbivores like the auroch in creating the best possible habitat for insects. I'll trample the dead wood and it creates a very nice habitat.
And Mary, you do, are beginning to appreciate these efforts.
Well, all I know is that I can't go into the garden because there's no paths through it.
I'm afraid that's deliberate, Mary.
I know.
I must
What's the intention there, Giles?
Intention is to have a cross free zone, a place you can go where no one is cross with you, and you can get on with and unite with all the land workers of the world. They're striving to have some sort of interplay with the physical earth.
But you're happy to tramp through your garden despite there being no paths, presumably.
Of course, the other thing is the unknown or underplayed action of animals in the garden. They create paths and you just use the same paths that they go on. So you find mysterious paths in your woodland which are not made by you, and you can just follow those.
Would it be a deer you follow?
Yeah, blackjack, badgers, all sorts of things. We have a lot of other men's pheasants in our garden, which of course I'm at liberty to poach, because if pheasants stray onto your land, you are of course legally allowed to take them for the pot. And I do that frequently in the winter.
Delicious, yes. We come to our last topic that this week, Elon Musk, who makes the Tesla cars, has become the world's first trillionaire, which is quite a lot of money. How much money do you think is enough for happiness and or an interesting life? What do you think, Mary?
I think, well, let's say you've got two children and you already own your house. Well, you'd need about 250,000 in order to buy your children a house, you know, do the mortgage payments. And then you
would... Why can't they buy themselves a house?
No child, no, anyone who isn't a boomer or working in finance can't buy their own house.
The boss of J.D. Weatherspoon there is famous for not giving his children any money because he says it stultifies ambition.
Yes, I know, and but so he's bought them flats, hasn't he, his children?
I'm not sure, but we're going off subject here, but the thing is...
What do you think, girls? You were born to expecting... from your father, weren't you?
I thought I was a trustafarian, and my mother very mysteriously said to me, there are two sorts of people in this world, those that wear ties and those that wear polo necks, and you're one of those ones that wear polo necks. I've never worn a polo neck in the last 30 years, but I think what she meant was that I could live a creative life, and that is getting harder and harder in Britain with inflation, council tax, rising raw materials costs, everything is going up. So we're not actually getting anywhere at all. Most of us are just treading water.
Yes, except the 1%.
But I must say, it is nice to have enough money to go to a recently opened private cinema in Marlborough called The Parade, which is an independent cinema, and go and see Dune last week, which was a really blew away the cobwebs.
Yes.
2¾ hours of so just sheer brilliance.
Three family members went and they ate popcorn and had one drink each, a total outlay of 50 quid.
No quite more, because the drinks and the popcorn was 20 quid and the tickets were
37.
But with that, you get incredibly comfy seats. and you can bring your drink into the auditorium, which is unbelievable.
I'd just like to say that a very wise friend of mine, who's very well connected to rich people for various reasons, says that it's a terrible mistake to start going about on your own jet and having houses all over the place. And the only really happy people he knows are rich people, are the ones that just go around in scruffy clothes, being interested in gardening and
rewilding
hens and things like that. But if you start showing off with your money, it's going to lead to trouble. And
also, you can't be in those satellite houses all the time. And you can guarantee that the people are looking after the houses in Mustique or whatever, are having parties every night of the week at your expense.
Yes, and they're the ones really enjoying it, because a rich person can go maximum 6 weeks a year to their house in Mustique or Barbados. The rest of the year, the housekeeper is enjoying it.
And that's where when the cat's away, the mice will play.
Mm.
And also, I think, don't you think, as you say, that unhappy category of rich person then tends to only want to hang around with other very rich people, which cuts down the herd of people you can hang around with, and so you reduce the chances of coming across interesting ones, don't you think?
Well, the other thing is,
yes, the gene pool of the rich is very, very must be very, very poor entertainment value.
Yeah,
because they're so busy making money that they don't have time to read interesting articles or say anything of much of interest.
No, that's not true, Giles. That's chippy. Of course, they're interesting because they're in the corridors of power. But the thing is that if you have a nice house and you want to invite interesting, fun people to come to it, well, they've got their own nice houses and they don't want to come to yours. So you have to fall back on court jester types, and they don't have as much money as you. So when you say, let's charter a small plane to take us to Beckway, then your house guests are embarrassed because they don't want to have to pay towards it.
There's also the argument that, as you say, it's so difficult to live a flash life, except for the 1%, is that what most people have to do is live in small places that treat themselves. So treats become important, like your overpriced visit to the cinema. And it's the same, it's said about the poor or young, is that they can never afford to buy a flat or a house. So that's why, perfectly understandably, they go out to dinner much more than we did when we were young. Would you agree with that theory?
They do have short-term pleasure from treats, yes.
Well, the rich and poor alike, now, unfortunately, I don't want to be a bore about this, but all their lives are going to be ruined by climate chaos, and their private planes are going to be tossed around like confetti in the skies. They're not going to enjoy life because we're all in this together, and that's what's, as George Osborne once said.
George Osborne.
Yes, didn't he famously say we're all in this together?
I thought it was Cameron.
And there were some raised eyebrows on the left.
I understand that you've suffered from a difficult climate this week. You've had very heavy rain, is that right?
Very heavy rain. We've got water penetration, or ingress, as surveyors like to call it, into the cottage. We've had a thatcher look at it, and it's a constant war of attrition against the elements. It's a quagmire in the garden, but according to James Rebanks, the shepherd, the job of everyone, landowners and gardeners, will be to retain the water, because modern farming, they like to get rid of the water and send it into the rivers. The thing is to retain it for carbon sequestration and to improve biodiversity, Mary. So I'm going to get a digger next week so that we don't waste all this water that's landing on our small plot of land. We're going to create a huge scrape, and with any luck, that will bring in snipe and redshank into our garden, overwintering birds which normally don't have anywhere to go.
Can you explain to Harry what a scrape is?
A scrape is where you get a digger, and they use it on sporting estates. It's a temporary pond to catch the winter floods, and then it'll die back. It'll probably dry up in the summer. But it is incredibly attractive to overwintering birds. And
you need particular form of watertight earth full of clay or something?
Well, I think it does help if you've got clay subsoil, because obviously that's half the battle, is the fact that it's going to eventually just drain away into the ground. But I think if you can use the tires of the whatever's doing the scraping to compact the earth, you're halfway there.
The digger.
So I'm going to mess up my garden even more in the forthcoming weeks. So we're going to have it looking like a bomb site very soon, I hope.
That's a very good place which to stop. And I look forward to hearing how the scrape goes. Thanks so much to Giles and Mary for this week's Aldi News Round.